Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast. I'm Sam McEwen along with Evan Bland, who is apparently in Ohio a week early. He's at the big house. Well, the big house. What the hell am I talking about? He's at the Horseshoe in Columbus, where Nebraska will be playing Ohio State in 9 days. Today is October 15th. The game's on the 24th. Hello, everybody. We're still drinking out of a fire hose. 9 days away doesn't necessarily feel like it. Doesn't feel like there's a game in 9 days, but there is. And Nebraska's feverishly preparing. So is Ohio State. Obviously, it's a big season for them. These are the two teams in the Big Ten that fought hardest for the Big Ten to have this season. So I'm pretty darn sure they're going to be fired up to play it. We're going to talk depth chart today. We've talked to Scott Frost a couple of different times, and Matt Lubick will talk to us later today, but we're going to record this beforehand. And then we also have we've talked to Chenander. We've talked to some of the position coaches, so I think we have a pretty good sense of where things are at. We'll certainly talk about the quarterbacks a little bit more today. So we'll kind of go through that depth chart questionnaire of where people are at, where what Husker fans might be able to expect based on what we've heard. We haven't seen practice. We've heard a little bit about the scrimmage. Third-hand reports are always imperfect. But we'll try to piece it together and see if Nebraska actually puts a depth chart out on Monday when they start their season. We'll also talk a little bit of Nebraska basketball. There's going to be more time to talk Husker hoops as we move on during the season because they began practice this week. But, you know, I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot of ground still to cover there. We'll get there to that at some point where we delve more into it. But for the time being, we'll spend about 5 minutes on Husker hoops. I'll give just a quick update of where they're at. They seem to be doing pretty well, and the golden window keeps coming together. I want to remind everybody that our sponsor is Team Schwalbach. Haven't heard of them? Well, I'm going to tell you about them. They're a family-owned Allstate insurance agency with four licensed insurance pros saving thousands of Nebraska Husker fans money. They sell homeowner, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska. They also insure all the big boy toys, motorcycles, boats, RVs, off-road vehicles. My understanding is it's going to be about 75 degrees on Saturday. It might be your last chance before it turns into the 40s and the 50s and you start watching football. If you've had a roof replaced in the last 5 years, give Daryl Schwalbach, Kyle Schwalbach, Nancy Mostek, or Kyle Murdoch a call at 402-590-5200. They can help you save a bundle. Flu obligation, insurance, reviews, and quotes. They're going to make sure all their fellow Nebraska fans are properly protected. You can contact them at 402-590-5200. That's 402-590-5200 or www.nebraskaallstate.com. www.nebraskaallstate.com. Thanks to Team Schwalbach and the Big Boy Toys. All right, let's talk depth chart. Evan, you wrote a really good story about the receivers on Wednesday. Wrote a little bit about some of the questions that still have to be answered by Nebraska on Tuesday. There's been a lot of ground to plow. It's been a really busy week in terms of news, especially on the Husker front. But we will start on the depth chart front with the position that that you just wrote about, which was the wide receivers. The Nebraska wide receivers are supposed to be upgraded this year. They're supposed to be better than what they had last year. And yet a lot of the names that we're hearing about are guys that did not play last year, that were walk-ons. Why is that? And is that a good or bad thing for the Huskers?
Right. It's been interesting, right? Like this was – like you mentioned, we haven't seen practice. Access has been extremely limited, as you would imagine. We haven't even been around these guys physically since early March. So all of kind of what we're cobbling together has been through these Zoom interviews. And I just think that first of all, it's been notable that as the weeks have gone on and the receivers have come up, the names that you start to hear aren't the names that you necessarily expected to hear when the recruiting process played out earlier in the offseason, right? Like every time Omar Manning comes up, the junior college transfer, the comments are pretty reserved about him. He needs to be on the field. He needs to, be out there more consistently if he's going to play a big role. The names that you do hear come up are like Levi Falk, the senior grad transfer from South Dakota. Yep. Wyatt Lever, the walk-on from O'Neill, I believe it is. And so, you know, it's good for those guys because they're out there. Cade Warner, the other one, Kurt Warner's son, who's been consistent, hasn't missed any time. His roommate, Austin Allen, says he's on scholarship now, so I guess we'll get that confirmed. But, you know, these are guys that weren't necessarily expected to be major contributors for Nebraska. So, you know, I thought it was notable, especially in contrast with what the Huskers brought in that 2020 class, the five receivers that Rivals called the number three haul at that position in the nation, and what's happened with those guys. You know, Will Nixon reports that he tore his ACL over the summer. Omar Manning has been in and out. Alante Brown has been in and out as he's kind of settled in and as the Huskers have ramped up contact. You know, Marcus Fleming has been mentioned a couple of times, the sprinter from Florida. And then Xavier Betts, we haven't really heard much about him either. And that's not to say anything about the guys who redshirted last year, Chris Hickman, Jamie Nance, Demarion Houston. We really just haven't heard much about those guys at all. And so I think big picture, that's kind of unsettling for Nebraska, right? Like the goal was to restock that room, to load up with scholarship contributors.
That's right.
And really to this point hasn't happened for all these variety of reasons. And so, you know, Scott Frost said as much earlier this week that the depth, he's pleased with the overall depth at that position, but they need to sort out who's able to go and who's not able to go real soon. So, you know, this has been a position all off season that was a huge question mark for the team. And now, you know, almost a week out from Ohio State, it's still pretty much looking the same way.
What do you think about Omar Manning? He posted something on Instagram. He was in the locker room. So
confirmed that dude's a physical specimen. My word, the big muscular guy. Obviously, hasn't been out there consistently. You can kind of read between the lines and see that it might not just be physical stuff with him. It might be some personal stuff and other things that he's going through. I think the only thing I would say about that is it's easy when you see what Nebraska's been through in terms of attrition at that position. I think it's easy to assume certain things when it might just be a totally different situation with him, where I don't know that we know the whole story about what's going on in his personal life and that could, you know, play an impact down the line. But certainly this was somebody who, I mean, when he committed, it was just kind of assumed that he was going to be a major contributor. And Scott Frost,
as I said, I mean, he should be a major contributor.
Sure. And what Scott Frost said on signing day, I mean, he said, this is a guy who looks different than anybody he's ever coached, could be a major player. So he hasn't downplayed this thing. And obviously you need him out there. If he's not out there, especially in this abbreviated season, man, that's a big disappointment.
Yeah. I mean, I think Omar Manning's going to play. I mean, that's my sense of it. So in terms of the depth chart stuff, I don't know where Manning's on it. They can work him in over time. What's important about his game is what he can help them do in key situations, especially in the red zone, either in attracting coverage or making plays in traffic or in one-on-one situations. Manning is a great post-up player. You don't necessarily need to have Omar Manning on the field for all 65 plays. It'd be great if he was. I mean, that would mean he's playing really good football for you, but you don't necessarily need to have him on the field for all 70 plays. I do think Levi Falk is a good chance to be a starter. He's a pretty good player. He got banged up at South Dakota last year. The previous year, he was a really good player. Seems to have good speed, good size, 6'2", 210. A lot of times there are FCS players who can more than handle themselves at the FBS level, and I think Falk is one of those cats. I think the slot position, so, you know, that sort of R position that Nebraska likes to use, Wandale Robinson is probably going to be your starter so long as he's healthy. I think there's a lot of things that Wandale Robinson can do for you, running the football, catching it, operating out of the slot, two-way goes, that kind of thing. I think Cade Warner is going to be the other guy. And I think part of what you get and what people need to watch for this season is those quick smoke screens that Nebraska likes to use as an extension of the running game. It's not really – it's a pass, but it's an extension of a run. It's a quick way to get the ball out on the edge. And if you have numbers out there, if you have more blockers than you do defenders, it can be a very effective way of gaining 9 yards without having to bang your running back up. or maybe you send your running back out in motion and you throw it to him on a swing pass. And instead of the running back having to navigate, you know, six defenders in the box, he's got to navigate two corners and a safety. And he's got two blockers out in front of him, and all he's got to beat is a safety. Well, that's a good football play if you get the blocking. The problem is that a lot of times last year, Nebraska didn't get good enough perimeter blocking from its receivers or its tight ends. I mean, I distinctly remember a play in the Iowa game where, Nebraska got nailed for a huge loss. I think it was Spielman or Mills. I can't remember who it was. Huge loss because there was a whiff on a block of an Iowa corner who came in and hit a 5-yard loss. It wasn't a great throw from Martinez either, but the bigger concern, the biggest issue that they have is being able to block that play up. I think that's a non-negotiable for Frost this year. That's a play they use a lot on first and second down and occasionally on third down. They want to be able to use wide receiver screens to get defenders out of the box, to spread the defense out. And then once you just spread it out a little bit, you got an outside linebacker who's a little bit away from the ball and he's got to worry about what's going on the edge of the field. That's when you hit Dedrick Mills downhill, boom, boom, boom. And so, you know, Brody Belt, Wyatt Lever, Bennett Folkers, these guys could be really useful to them. I don't know that the three of them are going to combine for more than, you know, 7 or 8 catches this season. But the value that they could bring to the table could be significant. You have to think of it that way. You have to think of their purpose in a play versus, are they Xavier Betts? I think Xavier Betts could end up being one of the most talented receivers Nebraska's ever had. Can Xavier Betts go out there and run up on a corner and block him up? I don't know. You know, we're going to find out, but I'm guessing that's going to take him some time. I'm guessing that's going to take some Marcus Fleming some time. I do think they expected Manning to be able to do that and be good at it. So I'm not exactly sure what his status is. I think his top-end ability means he can block, he can catch, and he can run. So I think they do hope that eventually Manning becomes a featured player in the offense. That hasn't happened yet. But if you're asking me who the three guys were going to be to start, if they started with three wide receivers, I'd say Falcon, Warner, and Robinson. Let's move to the tight ends, which is sort of an extension of the wide receivers, but, you know, not exactly. You got Jack Stoll, you got Austin Allen, you got Travis Vokolek, you got Hickman-ish. I mean, he's kind of a wide out too. And then you got Jared Bubak at that position and Kurt Raffdahl. So you actually have five tight ends, all of whom have major college football experience, two of it have it at other schools. That's a pretty good situation.
Yeah, it is. It's I think that the talk in fall camp has been, how do you get those guys more involved, right? Like Austin Allen, I thought, and he's one of the best quotes on the team, in my opinion, for what it's worth. And he came out and kind of laid it at the wideouts' feet a little bit and said, hey, if those guys can stretch the field, then that opens up the middle for guys like us. And it's been kind of I think it's worth noting that this group, other than Vokolek, was not recruited by this staff. I mean, these guys are more blocking type tight ends when they came in, and to their credit, they've really adapted and developed their game, Stoll and Allen especially. I put this in my story yesterday, but when you look at the tight end catches as it relates to total receptions in the offense, that was 17%. Their receiving yards, 326, that accounted for 12% of the offense's receiving yards. And that's just not up to what Scott Frost and Matt Lubick want. When you look at their offenses at their previous stops at Oregon, at UCF, they're using those guys a lot more in key spots. We've talked a lot about kind of the red zone or the goal line type situations where you need a big body to go up and bring down a ball, and just hasn't worked out that way for Nebraska. And again, maybe some of that falls onto the wideouts and kind of their inability to stretch the field a little bit. Maybe that's play calling. Maybe that's Martinez not seeing them. It's a lot of different things, but it does seem like more than the last couple off seasons, the talk has been really intentional about getting them involved in the passing game to some extent. So I think the starting situation there is still fairly clear cut. I think Jack Stoll's still your guy. Travis Vokolek's the big wild card in this thing. I mean, we saw him at practices when he transferred in a year ago, and he looked the part then. Coaches have been really complimentary of him. So he's kind of the dark horse in this thing. Maybe he rises up and really makes a move here. But, you know, barring that, I would expect Stoll and Allen to kind of keep doing what they've been doing the last couple of years, rotating in, blocking, and getting a little bit involved in the pass game.
I do think they want to throw the ball more to the tight ends. The way that maybe the routes progress gives the tight ends a little bit more of an opportunity, whether it's stretching the field or whether it's giving them an opportunity to get the ball out on the edge and, again, stretch the defense horizontally. Stoll mentioned running the routes faster, and I think there's some legitimacy to that, of getting the guys out there so they can, you know, maybe throw it in rhythm and have a little bit more space to throw the football. I think Vokolek has to play a role. I think what Stoll's going to bring to the table. I think you know what Allen's going to bring to the table. But Vokolek strikes me as the guy that, you know, can perhaps get something done at that position, and help them a little bit on third down. Didn't have a lot of third down catches last year from the tight end. Helped them a little bit in the red zone. They didn't have a lot of red zone catches last year from the tight end. I think those are the areas where, when I think of Nebraska's passing game, I think they got to get a little bit better on third down. They weren't bad. They got to get a little bit better there, and they got to get a lot better in the red zone. And that's where I think of Okalek and Manning. Those are the two guys of, like, when you get inside the 10 or the opponent's 20-yard line, especially inside the 10-yard line, do you have a play? Do you have players who can go make a play so that you're not trying to run, you know, some goofy, you know, three-man screen like they did at Purdue that didn't work? You know, I guess we'll find out. We'll go to running backs, then we'll go to offensive line, we'll go to quarterbacks. Running backs, Dedrick Mills is a starter. Everybody knows that. I think Mills got a lot better as the season went on at running in tracks. In other words, running on the track that you're supposed to when you're running the zone play. Hitting the hole, maybe not necessarily square on all the time, but kind of hitting it with maybe the front edge of your shoulder and then turning your shoulders once you get in the hole. And that's kind of what you got to do when you're in that zone running game. You know, you're not necessarily going to go to the hole, square your shoulders, then run through the hole. You know, like, it's not a gap play. You have to keep your speed and you have to kind of veer into the hole a little bit. There's an art to it, and I think Dedrick Mills kind of found that. Ryan Held coached him. Who do you think is going to be the backup? That's a question. I mean, it's a big question. It's a question in part because if Mills gets hurt, who replaces him? Or if Mills gets COVID, you know, like, who's the backup? Who's the number two guy on this team based on what we've heard?
I mean, based on what we haven't really heard anything definitive about that. Ryan Held kind of went through his roster in that regard. My guess today, if they had to put the backup out there, would be Ramir Johnson. I think his time last year, he traveled. He, you know, got some run against Maryland. I think it's probably got to be him. Certainly Marvin Scott, the freshman, has the physical look of someone who could jump right in. But, you know, I think listening to the comments of Held and some others, they're still learning that offense. And I think it's important to look back and remember how it took, Divine Azigbo, and it took Mills both some time to acclimate to what Nebraska wanted to do before they really took off. And so I think, especially with some true freshmen coming in, there has to be a grace period there as they settle in and figure things out. I think it's got to be Ramir Johnson at this point. I don't know what other direction you'd go.
I think if Ronald Tompkins is healthy, I think they like what he can do. Is he healthy?
And if he is, they've talked about limiting him anyway. So, you know, it may be a change of pace.
Which a limited role could still be a backup role.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, still be a 5 or 10 carry a game deal.
Yeah.
I think Mills is a 20 carry a game guy. I think he's pretty durable physically. But you might be able to get, you know, out of Tompkins 5 or 10 carries. It does sound like Ramir Johnson is more of a third down guy than maybe Tompkins would be. So Johnson can get out and play in space and, you know, maybe run a wheel route or something like that. But, you know, I understand how they feel about Mills.
I think in that first game against Ohio State, again, unless you're right in the thick of it, if you're down a couple of touchdowns, you need to get Ramir Johnson on the field and you need to figure out what he can do. Because you're going to need the guy in other games later in the year where it's going to be very important that he's good and in spelling bills. And again, that first game against Ohio State, maybe you get an opportunity to say, all right, Ramir, this drive's yours. We're down 21-7. Okay. This drive is yours. Show us what you can do. Diedrich, don't worry about it. Job's yours, but we need to see what this guy can do just in case we need him, as opposed to spot duty. I guess we'll find out how they handle that. Offensive line seems pretty straightforward. Your tackles are Brendan Hymus and Bryce Benhart. Nobody said different. Although I guess that could change. Your guard is Matt Farniok and Bo Wilson, who's I don't think has ever been able to be pushed out of that job. And the center is obviously Cam Durkins. They're deep. I think they have a lot of interior linemen who can help them. Trent Hickson is one of those guys. I think Ethan Piper is one of those guys. I think Nuri Nwili, the Colorado State transfer who got an immediate waiver, is one of those guys. I think they're a little thin at tackle, but Christian Gaylord can probably swing to both sides. Apparently Turner Cochran is Corcoran, however you want to say it, is in that mix. That's interesting. Role for Matt Sichterman in there too. That sounds, and then Brant Banks is in that mix too. It sounds like a pretty good group. Sounds like they're pretty happy with where they're at. They just got to make sure that Hymus doesn't get hurt. I mean, Hymus has got to stay out because otherwise, then it gets thin and it gets a little tricky quick. But so long as Hymus stays good and Juergens, I think it's important that Juergens stays healthy. I think they're going to be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just looking at it on paper, you figured that was going to be one of the strengths of the offense. And, you know, talking with the team, that's really been the case. I mean, the fact that we haven't really discussed the offensive line throughout most of fall camp is telling that it's pretty well settled. You know, Greg Austin has talked about the command presence of Juergens. I think better snaps are going to make a big difference. He's just kind of been able to slow the game down. Juergens has, I think that's important. And like you said, the line's deep too. So it has experience. They could roll out all starting five from last year if they wanted to. They're going to go a little bit of a different direction. But yeah, I mean, in a year when they had to ramp up contact quickly, in a year when you play hopefully 9 games in 9 weeks, when COVID testing comes into play, like depth of that line is critical. And Nebraska has that. So out of all the, you know, question marks around the team, O-line's a nice place to start to have something, and Nebraska sure looks like it's going to be off to a good start in the trenches.
Yeah, this could be their best offensive line since 2015. The 2015 line was pretty good. This would seem to be their best line since then. Yes, I would think.
Yeah, and it's not just top-end stuff. I think, again, the depth is what's so important there. Like, they have some guys, you know, Brendan Hymus is probably going to be in the league next year or 2 years or whatever. They have
so is Farniok.
Farniok, yeah.
But oh, yeah. I think both those guys – I think both those guys are going to be gone.
And that's fair. I'm just
not a knock on Nebraska. I think they're going to be ready to play in the NFL. And that's been your 5 years. Hymus will have been your four. Mm-hmm. Guys want to move on. I think both those dudes are probably NFL-bound and probably NFL draft-bound.
Yeah, I agree. But the guys behind them are serviceable, and they're coming along too. So good spot for the Huskers there.
Yeah, that's just my perception of it. This probably the last year you're going to get the benefit of those two guys. They've been here a long time. I think both of them have graduated. You know, it's okay. You wish them well because I think they could have profitable NFL careers. Of course, they stay a year and they might get the NLI stuff. You know, see, this never know. We'll talk about our NIL stuff. We'll talk about that another time because there's a lot of room still to cover on that. But that may affect people's decisions. Do you go and play? Are you going to go be a free agent in the NFL if you're maybe not Hymus and Farniok, but a couple of these other seniors? Or do you say, I can come back for another year of NIL? So I can get a little bit of NIL money.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, I can basically, you know, send out a couple tweets a day and get paid for it. Because I think that's what's coming. And I think it may affect how athletes make a decision for the pros. I know I feel very confident that NIL changes will keep guys that are on the draft bubble in the league longer because they get a little bit more money in order to stay in college. And I think in on the long run, that may be a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. But at the same time, I mean, your shelf life as a professional athlete is so short anyway. Are you really – unless you're like a high-end guy – like the quarterback or a star playmaker, like, are you really going to kind of mess around for an extra year and send out some tweets and make a few $1,000s? Or are you going to try to realize your dream and get a pro contract? Like, I feel like if the high end guys, maybe, but like, especially at the line or spots where your shelf life is so short, man, I don't know. I feel like that dream's going to win out, and maybe the earning potential is going to be greater than what we think it is right now. But you know, just some of the numbers that have been put out there from, you know, Open Doors or whatever seem to indicate that unless you're like face of the program type level, you know, you might be able to make a few $1,000s. So I don't know. We'll see.
You just never know how creative Nebraska can get, man. They can get pretty darn creative with some of these athletes, especially if they're from the state of Nebraska.
That's true.
All right. Moving on to quarterback. These are the high profile guys. Adrian Martinez and Luke McCaffrey. Do you think Luke McCaffrey is going to start at Ohio State?
No, I do not. Okay. I think the more compelling question to me is how real is this quarterback competition? Is this legitimately a situation where they are considering starting Luke McCaffrey early in the season, or is this a situation that kind of plays off the dialogue of the offseason, which is we need to push Adrian Martinez? If all the talk from Scott Frost and company is that, you know, Martinez need to be pushed, someone needed to light a fire under him, what better way to do that than to talk up Luke McCaffrey, to embrace this competition, to say that it's not clear yet, to say that he's the starter for now? You know, all that plays pretty well in motivating your two-year starter to not let up and to not go into cruise control, as Scott Frost said in the offseason. So, I don't know how truly authentic the competition is. Luke McCaffrey is a great athlete. By all accounts, he's picked up the offense really quickly. And when we've seen him out there, he's been dynamic. But I think ultimately, it's hard to unseat the two-year starter, the guy that was handpicked by the head coach 2 years ago. And then to unseat him for the opener against a national title contender, I don't see it personally. I think this has been good for Martinez. I think he's the guy, but I think we also have seen as the way Nebraska runs this offense that injuries happen, and that one way or another, we're going to see McCaffrey out there in significant moments this season.
This has been done a couple of times in Nebraska football history. The most notable time was in 2010 when Taylor Martinez jumped both Zach Lee and Cody Green to become the starter. Bo Pelini basically made that call. I've long believed the other players probably preferred Zach Lee, but they got Taylor. I think at the end of the day, that was the right decision. I think Martinez was a better player. In 92, Nebraska had a race between Frazier, Veland, and Mike Grant. Veland got hurt, so he kind of took himself out of the race. I think that was the year Veland was in the mix. And they went with Mike Grant for the first three or four games. Didn't play well at Washington. Probably could have won that game at Washington if Frazier had played, but he didn't play. They lost 29-14 out there. And then I think 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, Frazier was the starter at Missouri, and the rest is history. Steve Taylor I could be wrong about this, but I'm going to say Steve Taylor did not necessarily start the 1986 season, even though he had played in the 86 Fiesta Bowl and played really well. Boy, I'm stupid, but I have to look this up now because there's this part of me that no, he played. Never mind. He did play in 86. So Steve Taylor was a starter for 3 years. I think what I'm thinking of is 85. So Steve Taylor was this dynamic freshman quarterback in 1985. He didn't play right away. McCathorn Clayton. You remember that guy?
Vaguely, yeah.
So McCathorn Clayton, I think, was the quarterback, and Travis Turner was the cornerback in those years. And then Taylor kind of worked in as the season went on, and then I think by the end of the year it was pretty clear that he was the man. Yeah, Cleet Blakeman was in there too. So they cycled through a bunch of quarterbacks before Taylor kind of took the reins of that job for 86, 87, and 88. All three were great teams in 86, 87, and 88. So there's some history of this stuff, but it's rare for a 2-year starter to be supplanted. You don't see it very often. It just doesn't happen that often in the sport. I will say, it's a pivotal year for Martinez. A lot of times, guys this good, guys kind of peak in their second and third year. 4-year starters, you look some of the data. A lot of times, by that fourth year, they're actually kind of regressing a little bit to the mean because they haven't gone to the NFL. Washington's Jake Browning was that way, where his best season was a sophomore year when they went to the playoff, and then he got a little worse as his career went on. So I think Martinez can't make his freshman year his peak. You know, he's got to come out and play really good football. It can't be, you know, well, I mean, he was 13-27 and didn't throw a pick. Only threw one touchdown, rushed 9 times for 31 yards. Like, that doesn't really do it for me. So I think he's got to play really well, or otherwise I think Mark McCaffrey's going to play more and more. I do think there's a chance that Luke will play at receiver. I think he'd be one of Nebraska's best receivers if that's what he played full-time. And, you know, I think you find a way to get him on the field where you can. I know that Nebraska's sensitive to not wanting to, you know, usurp the starting quarterback. I think Scott Frost is sensitive to that because of his experiences in college. And so I don't think that they're gonna dig too deeply into that, but I guess we'll find out. Defense. All right, let's start with the defensive line. You wrote about them last week. Who do you think the three are, and who do you think maybe the six and seven and eight are?
I mean, I feel pretty good about the rotation that they're going to use. Starting lineup, to me, I think is wide open. I mean, I think Stilley, for one, well, he'll be a starter. But yes. but other than that, I mean, your other vets at this point that have significant playing time would be DeAndre Thomas and Damian Daniels. I mean, maybe you start Daniels week one. That's possible.
I think you do.
He could be that other guy. You know, I think they could start Ty Robinson. He could be that third guy.
That's probably the way it'll roll.
The gains that he's made. So that would be an interesting line.
I think Ty Robinson, they think he's going to be a big-time player. And yeah, he's put in the work. He put in some good work last year, and then he got in the weight room. And, you know, one of the things I appreciated about Ty is that he kind of admitted he had to reshape his body, which was true. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't come in. Maybe I suspect once he did that, they knew he was going to be a pretty special guy because Robinson's naturally strong and he's got some athletic ability. He just had to lose a little bit of the Sam fat.
So if those are your starters, then you've got DeAndre Thomas, who has a decent amount of experience, and then you kind of supplement that all with the junior college talent that they brought in the last couple of years, whether that was Keem Green, who took a year to kind of settle into shape, learn the defense, that sort of thing. Jordan Riley, we've heard a lot of really positive things about. What was the weight that Tua Yodi said he was up to? Like 340 pounds, or it was some ridiculous number for what he was up to.
Yeah,
you know, Casey Rogers, I think is going to be in that rotation. They like what he's done. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of that's going to be, at least to start, your seven guys. They moved Feldarius Payne to outside linebacker, so he's not really part of that mix technically on that line. Tate Wildeman's name's come up once or twice. I don't know how significant a role he'll play, at least right away. And you know, longer term, Nash Hutmacher, as a guy, a true freshman, doesn't have to worry about the 4-game rule. I would imagine he'll play some kind of a role at some point. I mean, he's too stacked. He's too strong.
He's big.
Not, maybe strong, get out there a little bit to see what he can do.
Yeah.
But I think they feel
pretty good. I could see Nash in a goal line situation.
Sure.
That's possible.
Maybe special team.
They've got some big physical bodies who can also play in goal line, but I don't know. I mean, we have to talk to Tuioti a couple more times. I'm guessing that Huttmaker was always going to be a year project because probably need to work a little on lateral movement there. And there's some – he's unbelievably strong. And he's pretty quick, but there needs to be some lateral, movement at times. Look, I mean, I think we know the names. Now we just got to watch them play. What I can tell you is that I've watched a lot from last year. I think you've watched some too. They got to get better. The players that they have right now have to get better than what they were last year. Because when those guys came in last year, they lasted as a group. They lasted about four or five plays, and then they'd have to bring in Darian or Khalil or Carlos again. It just, it was like it animated the offense. It just, when they'd bring in the second shift, which last year was. Daniels, Thomas, and Stilley, Honitz and Miller, and the second string outside linebackers, which to some degree was still JoJo. JoJo was still out there, although at times early in the season with Tyron Ferguson. But JoJo and Tanner, it just animated the defense. It animated the offense. That's just the best way to put it. You need to be better than that. And I think they will be. I'm not saying they won't be, but what we have on tape indicates they need to make a jump. And then Ty Robinson, who didn't, play fine for the time that he played last year, I think their expectation is he's going to be a big-time player and be a guy that makes a big jump and is one of these, one of the 10 to 15 best defensive linemen in the league by next year. So hopefully he makes that jump now and you feel pretty good. Inside linebacker, I'll roll through that quickly. I think it's pretty clear that Colin Miller and Will Honus and Luke Reimer are probably the three that are going to rotate there. I think Nick Henrich could be in the mix. Heard good things about Jackson Hanna. His family's pretty involved in the, just in the program too. They're, pretty involved parents and all that, so he's pretty engaged in the process. Garrett Snodgrass, I think, is probably coming along. And then I don't know what you do with Maga Clements. I think special teams will be an asset for Nebraska there. They'll be able to put him out there and let him do his hell on wheels and all the rest. So, I think there's going to be some good things that happen at that position. They probably got to stay healthy. Reimer's been dinged up before. Honus tore an ACL. Miller, I don't think, has missed a whole lot of time in the last several years, last 2 years. But they got to stay healthy there because they don't have a three deep yet, an experienced three deep. And then, so I'm not going to solicit your comments there. I've watched that position quite a bit. Outside linebacker, though, what do? You got JoJo Doman, you got Caleb Tanner, and they moved Phil Darius Payne there. Apparently, he lost weight. Nico Cooper, Garrett Nelson. Maybe Nick Henrich. Jamin Graham, I don't think he may or may not be there at that position at this point. Watching Jamin last year at times, just walking, moving, questioned whether, that project was going to be a one-year deal. It looked like it was going to be longer. But I don't think he's there. They got some walk-ons there that might be able to help, but that's a position where they got to get better. Is Gunnarsson. We haven't heard much about him. Also injury history there. That position's got to get better in a hurry. Jamari Butler, haven't heard much about him either. So that's probably the biggest unknown on the defense, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's unknown. They need to get better, and, they can't get hurt there. If Doman or Tanner go down, like you're talking Nelson or Cooper, boom, you're starting essentially. So, and as much as we know that the defense plays in terms of snaps because of how fast the offense goes, 80, 85 snaps, man, these guys better be in great shape because, it's a thin spot. We've talked a lot about how Nebraska's missed at that position in recruiting over the last couple of years. Payne maybe could offer something, but, man, there's not much margin for error there at all.
No, it just isn't. And, you know, I think they've got a good position coach there. They think they have a good positions coach there. But, you know, that's Doman might be the best player on the defense. There may be people who cringe when they hear that. But, I mean, Doman makes plays. So I'm not, you know, Doman can play. He can play for a lot of teams. And, but, you know, he's one guy. And then you got Tanner, who I think has to make a big jump. And I think they think he will. But, you know, those guys, if you play them 75 snaps a game, they're going to get a little tired. So you'll have to have backups. The secondary, Nebraska feels very strong about, just based on their comments. Corner seems pretty clear. DiCaprio Boodle and Cam Taylor-Britt. What then?
Well, safety's pretty clear, too, I think. Deontay Williams and Markel Dismuke, it seems those guys have really settled in there. You know, they lost Braxton Clark to the injury, which is unfortunate, but I personally still think they have some decent depth there. You know, Nadab Joseph was someone that they brought in that you've heard positive things from when people asked about him. You know, sounds like Quentin Newsom has had time to heal and might be ready to roll when things get going here. Obviously, the staff loves Miles Farmer as a defensive back and what he can do. Noah Pola Gates was someone who spent most of the offseason getting healthy too. And then, you know, you have Agent Zero, the true freshman, Ronald Delancey, rolling out there with the Zero jersey for the first time. And I think Cam Taylor-Britt mentioned this week that he's someone who's you know, grinding, playing like a dog, like he says. And so I feel like that's a position, despite the attrition with, you know, Jaden Francois and Henry Gray and the like, that's still in pretty great shape, personally. I mean, yeah, again, it hurts to lose Clark, but they've got a lot of playmakers back there. And, you know, as long as the line can generate some kind of a pass rush, I feel like they're going to be in for a pretty big year, personally.
If the line can generate pass rush, I guess we'll find out. When we go to special teams, we don't have an answer yet. Daniel Cherney and William Prista are the two options at punter that I'm aware of. At kicker, you have Connor Culp, Tyler Crawford, Chase Contreras. It appears that Crawford and Culp, according to Coach Scott Frost, kind of have separated themselves from the pack. They have many kickers in camp. I don't think it's just three. We don't know anything about those guys. We have not really talked to those guys. You will know them by their deeds. I mean, we won't know until they play how good they are. Here's two things that I will say. One, people will fixate on the field goals. I'd fixate on the kickoffs, how good the kickoff guy is, whoever that is, and how good the punting is. Those two issues. Maybe they'll be a good field goal kicking team. It would be great if they were. But if the team goes 13 for 18, everybody will live. The sport is moving in a direction toward going on fourth down. I think Scott Frost in the perfect universe is scoring 35 to 42 points and isn't relying per se on hitting three or four field goals in a game to win. Maybe. Now, is there going to be a question mark when there's a 42-yarder for a game winner? Sure. I think that's fair. I think you have to get points when you can, but that would be true of any kicker in college. The kicker at Oklahoma had a chance to beat Texas with an easy, easy kick, and he shanked it. I mean, he duck hooked it. Cameron Dicker had a chance to put Texas on the board, and the kick got blocked. That stuff happens. Alabama does not have good kicking. Clemson does not have good kicking. The field goal kicking is in college is long been improved. The kickoffs and the punting, that stuff's got to be on point. And they've got to get better at punting. They've got to get back to where they were with Sam Foltz, but even before Foltz, with Brett Maher, with Alex Henry, they've had a huge tradition of great punters at Nebraska. Got to get back there, whether it's Cherney or it's Pristup, I don't know. And then on the kickoff front, they can't kick the ball to elite returners at the elite returners 5-yard line in the middle of the field. They can't do that.
Touchbacks.
Just can't do it.
So when they play Iowa and Amir Smith Marset, they need to be able to kick it out of the end zone if they can seven times. Don't even kick it to him. They're going to play some other good kick returners this year too. The guy from Wisconsin left, and he's at Rutgers now. They're going to play other good kick returners. You know Minnesota's going to have a good kick return. They got good skill players. I bet you dollars to donuts that Illinois will have one that can return kicks. Your kickoff man has to be good at his job, bottom line. And last year that wasn't the case. I'm not sure it was the case the year before either. Those are the two things. Watch punting, directional punting especially. You can't kick it 60 yards straight. You got to kick it 51 yards, 4 inches from the sideline, and then the kickoffs. And don't fixate as much on the field goal kicking. Like, it's important. I agree. It was a carnival last year. But the bigger issue last year, they lost games because of the kickoffs. I don't know that they lost any games because of the field goals. Hell, they won a game over Northwestern with a backup outside linebacker who was a walk-on making a field goal. They won that game. So they lost games because of the kickoffs. And they lost games because against Indiana, when they needed to flip the field on a punt, the ball goes off a guy's foot, and it's like the 30-yard punt, and Indiana's got a short field. Boom, they score, and they take the lead. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that fans need to pay closer attention to than the field goal kick.
And I would just add to that, too. I mean, the analyst, Jonathan Rutledge, who's there, the kickoff units, the coverage units – the last couple of years have been populated more than half with former walk-ons or walk-ons. So now that they're recruiting this thing up again, that redshirted class from 2019 is ready to roll. There's no four-game limit for a redshirt this year. I think all those things are going to make an impact too. But Nebraska for so long had been you can almost take it for granted that they'd have a good kicker, they'd have a good punter, and the special teams wouldn't sink them. And man, the last 2 years, you can see how miserable life can be when those things shoot you in the feet. So I would expect them to be better, and they have to be better, certainly if they want to get to where they want to be.
There isn't any question. They have to cover kicks. Well, they have to cover kickoffs better. I think they have return options. They need to they'll find somebody who can return kicks physically. Can they block for them? Can they rip off a 70-yarder when they need it? That's a question, but I just don't. I mean, if you don't have a guy that can kick it through the end zone, do you have a guy that can at least put it up and give your coverage a chance? Hopefully you do, because against Iowa, Amir Smith Marset had the opportunity to run out of 35 yards to his left and run around everybody because he caught the ball. It got down there fast, and he was able to run around everybody because he had time to do it. So the kickoffs are so important, and then the punting, The issue with Caleb Lightbourne was never the question of whether he could kick it a long way. Caleb Lightbourne can kick it 60 yards straight. Problem was with Caleb is when you asked him to kick it, pin it on a sideline, is when it went off the side of his foot. So, that was the issue there. And, Armstrong was okay. He was fine, but he was better in 2018 than he was in 2019, and so it goes. All right, let's talk a little quickly, just a little bit of hoops for the Husker fans. So the Golden Window tournament is still sort of progressing. I think they have 11 teams now, according to multiple reports with CBS and whatnot. And it's a good list. I mean, there's some good teams in there. They're maybe not teams that you would necessarily – I mean, they're not Duke, but St. Louis and San Francisco and Nevada, and these are good programs. I mean, they're solid. Oklahoma State may or may not be very good. I don't know. LSU is probably going to be a top 25 team. Whether or not they'll be able to go to an NCAA tournament may be based on ongoing investigations of the program. But so I think it's going to be a good look. And of course, the Big Ten has to come through and make answers, but at the same time, I think Nebraska's done a good job of setting this thing up, and they're going to get some games in. I'd be surprised if they won them all. I mean, the teams they're playing are good enough to where if you get through this thing undefeated, you've done something. I mean, you've actually, put a couple of nice games on your resume, because some of these teams are going to go, you know, back to their own leagues and win, you know, win the league or win 20 to 25 games, so on and so forth. So there's that. I think it's striking to me how good Fred Hoiberg seems to feel about this team, you know, in terms of their intangibles. There's not, you don't know until you play the games how people are going to shoot and all those things. That's tough to know. You hope everybody comes out and does what they've been doing in practice and camp, but he believes in them as workers and as people. And when you have your coach's trust and belief on that front, it just tends to break in a good direction. And I don't think Hoiberg was falsely optimistic last season based on the stuff that I watched. So I don't think he was, I think he talks about this team a little bit differently than the one last year. And then I just think they probably got some better players. People are not, I mean, this has been such a weird year with the pandemic. People aren't probably paying a ton of attention to all the guys they got on the roster, but Trey McGowan's was a 2-year starter at Pittsburgh, which last year Pittsburgh was a better team than Nebraska. They were 16-17, I think, in the ACC, and they were better than Nebraska. So, you know, Trey is a legit ACC starter, and they added that. That's a hell of a piece to add. And then I think, you know, Delano Banton is somebody that they believe in being a good player. I think Teddy Allen is going to be a little bit of a wild card game to game, but I think when you look at his stat line, it's going to be good. Teddy will have some games where he scores 27. And I think he may have a game or two where he's down in the single digits because that's just kind of how he plays. But, you know, I think there's going to be that piece there. And then I've asked many times, I think all the media has asked, the mystery guy, Lat Mayen. You know, like this guy, they talk about him like he's going to play in the NBA. Now, they don't use the word NBA for the acronym. But he's 6'9", and he makes 86 out of 100 threes in a drill. And then he comes back and makes 82. Mm. Well, that's an NBA player. So I don't know. I mean, this is the guy that you – every so often, and this is true in any number of teams, a guy comes along. We're like, we didn't know this guy was going to be this good, but he's good. And, you know, that hasn't happened that often in Nebraska basketball, to be frank. But, for example, Tony Farmer, many, many years ago, 30 years ago now, Tony Farmer was that. I mean, they knew he was going to be good, but, I mean, my God, he was a great player at Nebraska for the 1 year he was there. you know, but I don't know that they knew. What Isaiah Roby became, I think Nebraska projected that he was going to become that good. But what he started as Nebraska and then what he became by his junior year, he was a pretty special player. Lat Mayen may very well maybe this guy that you're just like, we didn't, you know, he came in and was expected to be X, Y, and Z, and lo and behold, he's averaging 13 and 7, and you know, he's awesome. And he's averaging 13 and 7, and he's only taking 7 shots a game, you know, that kind of guy. You just never know what you're gonna get sometimes. And Mayen seems like this mystery guy that we gotta talk to before the season begins, because it just by the sounds of it, the guy's got a lot of ability. So we'll see. I think they're going to end up in the top 5 of this 5-star recruit, who is the younger brother of Trey McGowan. His name's Bryce McGowan. He's going to, according to recruiting service, scouting service, he's going to announce his top 5 on Monday. I think Nebraska probably going to make that cut, partially because of the connections. Bryce McGowan's, I watched 20 minutes of tape online, which is a lot actually. And he's a hard player to quantify. He is skinny. He's long. He shoots it quick. He's kind of loose with his dribble. He's really athletic, and Nebraska's not had a lot of players like this. So I don't, you know, he's a hard player to pin down. He's very interesting. I don't want to say Ben Simmons because that would be the wrong impression that the kid's that good. But he's lean and he's a pretty good shooter. He can really get to the rim. He's long. He's an interesting player. I think Nebraska would do quite well to get this guy. He could do a lot of things for him. He could get two steals and four or five rebounds and 11 or 12 points. He could just do a little bit of everything. He's really talented. But again, a hard player to quantify. You could play him a lot of different places. He's 6'5" and he's skinny, which means he's got room to grow, room, you know, 15 pounds to put on if they wanted to. So if Nebraska's able to get him, he might be a one and done guy, but I think they'd take him and I think they'd play him. So, you know, Nebraska's got a really good pitch, recruiting pitch. Hoiberg knows all the analytics numbers. He understands all that. He presents that to them. And then what he's able to do also is present the, here are the guys that we recruited from out of high school, and here's how many of them ended up in the NBA, and here's what they're doing. And that's a pretty appealing pitch. And then Hoiberg's also able to say, hey, I know everybody in the NBA. I was just there. I know this person. Hey, we can help you. It's just a whole different kind of pitch than a Tim Miles, who I think was a pretty good recruiter, can give. He just can't. You know, Hoiberg can give a completely different pitch. And these kids want to hear the word NBA. The five stars want to hear NBA. They need to hear NBA. And then you throw in Nebraska's NIL philosophy and vision and what they'd be able to do. I think they'd like – I think the five stars, the high-level kids, are going to like what Nebraska can offer a lot. So we'll see if Bryce McGowan's puts Nebraska in his top five. He could sign in the early signing period, and Nebraska could have a five-star recruit. That'd be amazing. I mean, it could happen. It could legitimately happen. So I think things within that program are looking pretty good. Yeah, they're looking up. But that's kind of where things are at. You want to do some picks real quick?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's zip through these because we got to get on a Matt Lubick Zoom call. We're only going to have nine this week because Cincinnati and Tulsa was just canceled. Yep. I'm up two thanks to Coastal Carolina beating Louisiana last night. Now I don't have to – I don't know if I was ranking Louisiana anymore, but now they don't have to be ranked. How's that? BYU-Houston.
Give me BYU.
You know what? I've been ranking BYU, but I think Houston's going to win. SMU Tulane, I will take SMU.
Same. Yeah.
Auburn at South Carolina. I have not been impressed with Auburn so far. You take that awesome receiver, Williams, off their team. They're not very good. He's like easily one of the best players in the country. Their team is average. I'm taking South Carolina. I'm taking Will Muschamp.
Auburn shouldn't have beaten Arkansas, but I think they'll beat South Carolina.
Okay. Kentucky at Tennessee. I'm going to take Tennessee. Defensive struggle.
I agree. Volunteers.
Central Florida, Memphis. Usually the marquee game in the AAC. This year it's not. They both already lost a game.
I'll take Memphis.
Memphis. I believe in UCF. Georgia, Alabama.
Yeah.
Weird Nick one. Saban. I know, man. I snuck it in there. It's not the last one. Georgia, Alabama.
Man, and Alabama looked mortal last week, too. You know, Alabama's just one of those teams that, like, you start counting them out with Saban's COVID test and their game last week, and then they just roll. So I'm going tied.
I have Georgia ranked number one this week, but I do that based on looking backward, resume, not looking forward, which is what you're supposed to do, although a lot of people don't do it. I'm going to take Alabama. I like them. I like their quarterback more, and I think they'll be able to score enough points to beat Georgia, presuming the game is played. You can't cancel a game because Nick Saban is not there, so I think they're going to play the game. Boston College at Virginia Tech.
Give me Va Tech.
Tech. I'll take Va Tech as well. Ole Miss, Arkansas. I'll take Ole Miss. Here's why. I'll tell you, and I'll give you a little hint. Lane Kiffin's former offensive coordinator at Florida Atlantic. Kendall Briles is the offensive coordinator at Arkansas. So Lane Kiffin knows Arkansas's offense, and he'll be able to help his defense, which is awful. Well, it should be a little bit better against Arkansas.
I guess. I'll take Arkansas, man. They're on the come here.
I like them. I mean, I like one of my 15 or 20 favorite helmets in college football. Arkansas. Whether it's the red one or the white one, I like both.
Classic look.
Oh, it's awesome. Miami at Pittsburgh.
Miami bounces back.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to take Miami too, but they're like a 13-point favorite, and there ain't no way they're going to cover that. I don't think they're that good. I think they're an okay team that, you know, got a nice boost out of beating a horrible Florida State team and a really mediocre Louisville team. So we'll see. But I'll take Miami as well. So we differed on, let's see, 1, 2, 3. Didn't we? 1, 2, 3. Yeah. So we have three differences on the list. Okay. Houston, BYU, South Carolina, Auburn. We differed on 4. UCF, Memphis, and Ole Miss, Arkansas. Oh, there's some deviation there. Maybe we'll hit the inside straight and get all 4. All right. That's everything for us this week, guys. Next week, we'll be back with Tom Chattel, hopefully Dirk Chatwin, and we will preview the season. We'll give our predictions. We'll talk a little bit of Big Ten predictions, and gosh, who knows from where. It's been an interesting 9 months to get to this point, and we're there. A season awaits amid a pandemic. OMG. Yeah. As we can. Thanks, Husker fans.